Thank you for joining us on this podcast from Hilltop United Methodist Church. Hilltop is located in Sandy, Utah, 985 East, 10,600 South. The locals would say we are just a little bit east of the intersection of 7th and 106th on 106th. God's blessings to you. We hope to see you on Sunday morning at 10:30 a.m. Peace be with you.
In the song that we sang at the beginning of the service, we wanted to declare the year of Jubilee. John, can you give us a short explanation of what that means?
This will be short. Think the number 7. For in 6 days the Lord made heaven and earth, the sea and all that in them is, and rested on the 7th day. The Lord called that day the Sabbath day and hallowed it. When the children of Israel moved into the promised land, they worked for 6 years, they planted and harvested, and the 7th year they rested, and the land had rest as well. And after 7 cycles of 7 years, they got through the 49th year. The 50th year became an important year because if you'd sold any of your land prior, you got the land back free. If you were working as a servant for somebody, you got to get out of your servitude free. It was essentially a reset button you have to get all over.
Amen. Now, let me ask you a quick question, John. Is the year of Jubilee in favor of the status quo or a rejection of the status quo?
I didn't think about that for a while.
If you're a landowner, I think you'd like it the way it was. This morning, I owned the land, and this afternoon, I don't.
Yeah.
Okay. This Jesus guy, passage we just read, the passage we just heard read to us, reminds us that part of what Jesus is come into the world to do is to speak like a prophet. He speaks with a prophetic voice. Now, those of you that have not studied the Old Testament, the job description on a prophet is, you could almost suggest that the prophet is designed to shake you up a little bit. Is that a fair statement? It's designed to sort of take you where you think you are, full of yourself and confident that you know what God is calling you to do, calling you to be, calling the church to be, and it shakes it up. And not just a little bit, it's a whole lot. Now, the context of this particular passage is that Jesus calls it a parable. A parable about the kingdom. Now, most of the Jesus parables can be understood in very many different ways. But this one, he's preaching a sermon. And the sermon he's preaching is drawn from the book of Isaiah. It's Isaiah 5, verses 1 through 7. And it's almost exactly the same story. We've got this vineyard. The vineyard has been protected for a period of time. And in Isaiah, it's a vineyard, and God, through the voice of Isaiah, is hoping that there will be some fruitfulness from this vineyard and its protection. It's good soil. All these things that go on for the development of this vineyard. And all they produce is wild grapes. Wild grapes that are good for very little. And God, through the voice of Isaiah, says, you know, if you don't turn your way around, if you don't change your ways, I'm going to take my fruitful. I'm going to look to another people who will be fruitful. And when Mary Jean read this, the real hinge of the story, the real element, not, and frankly, it's the hinge of the story for Matthew. It's how Matthew understands the good news of Jesus Christ. It's how he understands the Jesus project. He understands Jesus' project in terms of fruitfulness, what it is to be fruitful. I have a master's in business administration. I have a master's in business administration in quantitative methods. I didn't hear any oohs. Now, those of you who don't speak quantitative methods, it's about what? It's about numbers. And we would be inclined to take a look at fruitfulness, and we would focus on numbers. I'm a numbers guy. I like numbers. David Bolter knows this. And Elaine Shaw, I walk out with the acolyte, and I get back there and start taking my stuff off so I can, not quite as hot. It's not quite as hot today, is it? That's a number, by the way. And I get to the back, and David Bolter walks up to me, and the first thing he says to me is, 247. You know why? I'm interested in knowing the number. I want to know what the attendance was. I've met pastors at the Rocky Mountain Conference who they tell me that they have no idea what their average attendance is on a Sunday morning. I just go, how do you do that? So numbers are important to me. And we're about to start a stewardship campaign, and numbers should be important to us. We're going to hopefully get some more people to sign pledge cards. But I'm interested in particular that with this is not only more pledge cards saying people will step up in the term of treasure. I'm also interested in people getting out of their comfort zone a little bit, getting their world shaken up a little bit, and saying, you know, I think I'm prepared to step up as a member of the choir. I'm prepared to step up as helping us lead worship. I'm prepared to step up in growth as a disciple. I'm prepared to step up as a member of the finance group. I'm prepared to even, God forbid, stay after church while the fellowship is going on in the fellowship hall and counting money. Oh my goodness, I'll even go and do that. Would that be good news for anybody but there's a current counter? Would you like some relief on that task? So that's one other thing I want you to explore. Now, this particular passage of Jesus here can be actually called some hard words. Most of us have sometime in our life walked into a church where there's this picture of Jesus, and he'll probably have a child sitting on his lap and a lamb at his feet. You ever seen that picture? Is that picture of some familiarity? Okay. And that Jesus is true about 75, 80, 85% of the time. Let me ask you a question. Do you think that Jesus, that picture of that Jesus, is what got him crucified? No. He was willing to come in and talk to the people of his day, and he would, using the words of the prophets, using the words of the Old Testament, would preach a sermon. And what did the Pharisees, the Sadducees, the liberals and the conservatives, he got them both mad at him. Liberals and the conservatives. The Sadducees were the conservatives, and the Pharisees, believe it or not, were the liberals of the day. And he got them both mad at him. And he says, you know, unless you're more fruitful in what it is you're doing, I am prepared to go somewhere else. God is prepared to go somewhere else. Now, I don't want us to enter into October with the idea that Pastor Dennis said numbers aren't important. Can we have an amen?
Amen.
Somebody on behalf of Nancy Steffens say amen. Okay?
Amen.
But I would say to you that those are critical. Those are important. I shouldn't use the word critical. Those are important. But I would say to you that Jesus' sermon was less about Sunday school attendance, less about volunteers in the sound booth, less about going from 110 to pledge to 120 to pledge, less about averaging $2,000 on the pledge to $2,200 on the pledge, all of which are things we need to try and do. But I would think that Jesus' sermon is actually focused on the last portion of the Isaiah 5, verse 7 passage. And he says that what God expected was justice, and instead he found bloodshed. And what God expected was he found righteousness, but he heard people crying. Jesus in this sermon, and Matthew reminds us of it at the end, is speaking prophetically. He's speaking in such a way that he's basically turning around to the group and he's saying, here's what the story is, and I'm trying to get you to understand it, and I want you to understand it in such a way that at this point, after this point, there's no more debate. It's almost like he's saying, enough said. You want to try that?
Enough said.
What Jesus is talking about in the terms of fruitfulness is less about Sunday school attendance, and that's important, and more about changing your heart. It's more about changing your heart. I heard it at the event I was at in Denver yesterday. A noted church consultant named Gil Rendell made the comment, fruitfulness can be measured in the terms of, for example, do the people in this congregation have a greater capacity for forgiveness than they did last year? I don't know how you measure that. I don't know how you measure it, except by being here. I believe that this church is in transition. This church is in transition of moving from the way things were to the things that they will be. I get that not so much by numbers. Numbers aren't telling me that. It's rather inviting people to engage this church in a loving, caring way, and they respond in a positive way. And that doesn't mean that there aren't occasionally out there the Eeyores of this world. And, well, you know, if that's the way we're going to do things, I'm just going to have to leave. I pray that doesn't happen. I really do pray that doesn't happen. But I would invite us to know that when Jesus confronts us, when Jesus looks us in the eye and says, you know, I need to shake your world up just a little bit, that comment that I know I focus on sometimes, you is a plural. It can be a plural. Sometimes when we can make it too plural, and we can sit there and say, yeah, I want Jesus to shake your world up, everybody else's world up, but mine's just fine. Thank you very much. And when we do that, we're failing to see the opportunity for fruitfulness that God invites us to see as possible. Over and over and over again, as I study my 10 to 12 hours to get up here and be able to give you 20 minutes, I come to the conclusion that this Jesus wants to shake up my world, wants to shake up your world. For everyone that thinks that you know exactly where Jesus wants you to be, I invite you to be prepared to have God shake you just a little bit. Safely, but shake you in such a way that maybe your life is altered a little bit of this newer and different understanding of what Jesus calls you to do. The Rendell comment yesterday, do the people in this congregation have a greater capacity for forgiveness? I'd say overall, yeah, but still there's this residual element of lack of forgiveness. Do the people in this congregation have a greater capacity for reaching outside of our building? Yeah, but we can still work on that. Do people inside this building, inside this congregation, have a greater capacity for flexibility and adaptability? I think the answer is yes, we do. Yes, we do. But I can't measure it. I can't put a number on it. I can just talk to you, get a sense of being around you, having a barometer that was established from 2 years ago and sort of looking at where we are now, and I see progress. I see hope. Gosh, if I said I see change, then I'd be a politician, wouldn't I? I see opportunities. This Jesus sometimes wants to have a conversation with us in such a way that we have an extended dialogue. But at some point in that conversation, Jesus looks over at us and says, you know, I think we've reached the end of this conversation. And I invite you to know that I'm saying, enough said. Enough said. Enough said. Let us be in an attitude of prayer. Gracious and loving God, we're about to embark on a season where we're going to reflect upon what it is that the fruits that we wish to harvest, that you wish to harvest on our behalf. Allow our hearts to be warmed. It's easy for us to have hearts of stone. It's not new in your book. It's not new in your experience with us. But open our hearts. Allow our hearts to be changed, transformed, to see the opportunity that we have to produce fruitfulness in your world. Greater forgiveness, greater compassion, greater mercy, all of which shake us a little bit out of our status quo. And all of God's children say, Amen. We're going to welcome.
Thank you for joining us on this podcast from Hilltop United Methodist Church. Hilltop is located in Sandy, Utah, 985 East, 10,600 South. The locals would say we are just a little bit east of the intersection of 7th and 106th on 106th. God's blessings to you. We hope to see you on Sunday morning at 10:30 a.m. Peace be with you.